Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mahon.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. On a recent episode, we heard about fly fishing for rainbows with Dennis Goulding, and another fish to target over winter, of course, is pike. And pike on the fly is becoming increasingly popular. For this week's episode, we wanted to find out more about the tactics, the species, and why fly fishing for pike isn't just for Christmas either. And so we spoke to Marcus Muller, an advisor to the IFI and a pike fly fishing aficionado, as well as Bodo Funk, the well-known pike guide based in Boyle, County Roscommon. And Tom, before we hear from Marcus and Bodo, just curious, have you done much pike fishing yourself?
Yeah, years ago I used to do a fair bit of pike fishing. The last couple of years I haven't. And I got kitted out to actually try a bit on the fly, because the only time I have tried for the pike on the fly, I actually didn't have the kit myself. And I have the kit, and it's kind of, you know, these back to our little bucket list. It's a thing I'd like to try myself, now that I have the kit for it.
Where would you do it?
Oh, like any. You see, this is one of the things I was asking the lads. I mean, where would you do it? I mean, there's plenty of pike around the lakes here. There's plenty of places. It's open everywhere, so it's a matter of finding any place. And that was interesting. Why I wanted to talk to the guys about how they go at it. I mean, have you ever tried it on the fly?
It's a bit of a tradition. I used to go out over Christmas onto Loch Derg, lure fishing for the pike. It's tough conditions.
Around Christmas.
So when I'd be off for a couple of days, I'd always kind of, I love that period between Christmas and New Year. It's that kind of downtime, and it's always a great time to, I find, just get a bit of headspace and back off things. And I'd always take one day off to go fishing. And yeah, the last few years I'd go to Loch Derg and TJ's in Killaloop. TJ, if you're listening, hello. He's a good man. Bringing you out on the boat. So it's the kind of southern part of Loch Derg.
Right down the Killaloe side, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's fabulous. Like, it's actually somewhere I'd love to try for brown trout. But TJ's always telling me as well, like, because I come in the winter when it's bloody tough. And this is what, in fairness, what you'll hear from Marcus and Bodo. And it's interesting that we kind of, and even the fact that we're doing it, oh, it's winter, let's turn to pike. But the reality is, it's, you know, it's a tough time if you're starting to pick it up, you know, to try it. Like, if you're going to do it properly, do it, you know, in the kind of spring, summer, kind of when conditions are better, it's easier to find the fish, easier to get to the fish.
I thought that was very interesting. All right, Chavs, pertinent point.
Yeah, exactly. But then, like we said, the only reason, probably why a lot of game anglers turn the pike in the wintertime, is because it's the only thing they can really fish for, you know, well, apart from the rainbows, but you know what I mean, in terms of the lakes and the rivers, like.
Well, it's a bit like what we said when we were talking to Dennis Goulding. It's, you know, probably the only time a lot of guys only tried the small water fisheries.
Yeah, you know. There you go. I have to say, though, and I was actually, I've been out river fishing for pike as well, and that was on the fly, and I have to say, I did enjoy that now. You're kind of getting them, you know, kind of jack size. But what I loved about it was seeing them follow the fly.
Yeah.
And like, just, it was just, and you're pulling, you're stripping the fly in, and you just see it, and then he's gone for it. Like, and it's, that's a lovely thing. And there is something. I know winter can be tough and all, especially I find on the lakes. But I find if you're on the river, at least you're moving, you're kind of walking, you're casting, you're
keeping
moving.
Warm.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just think there's something magical about walking across the fields if it's a frosty, crispy morning.
Yeah.
The sun,
yeah.
And I love that low light from the sun coming up. There is something magical about it. And I can, do you know what I'd love? Actually, speaking of wintertime, I'd love to try grayling fishing. I know this is completely off topic. But again, I think of the river. I think of that kind
I
of.
I was going to say, but it was kind of off topic. But yeah. Just when you said the winter, the frost and everything, it does spring to mind, but we don't have them. So you got to, you know.
that's not so.
Yeah.
But look, it's, I think in fairness, the Marcus Botto thing, I think there's a lot to learn. A bit like with Dennis, there's a huge amount of information in this.
I was just going to say the exact same. Just, you took it from there because, you know, I learned a lot from Dennis, but although I suppose, and here's the thing for me, with Dennis, I expect to learn, but I didn't expect to learn that much. It's just, but I do know it's outside. Small water fishing is outside my comfort zone. Okay, mm-hmm. Trout fishing, but it's outside my comfort zone. But like, it was great to listen to the guys because I really picked up a lot there, like on what you need to go at, what you need to be at, you know, what you need to be doing. It was really good, and it was actually interesting when you asked either of them, you know, separate questions, but they both came back with more or less similar answers.
Yeah.
You know, they're singing off the same hymn sheet, really.
Yeah, exactly. But like for anybody, if you're looking to start out, if, you know, you're interested, if you've done it before, there's a huge amount to learn. They're both very experienced pike on the fly anglers. And as we slag them off later in the episode, it takes two Germans to come to Ireland to tell us about how to catch Irish pike on the fly. But I didn't realize was how big it is in Europe. You know, I know they've Zander, and but like in Scandinavia as well, the pike, it is actually a very big thing over there for them.
The lads touched on it there, like in Germany, it's their biggest sport fish as such, you know. And they touched on Wells, the catfish, but while Wells probably is bigger and everything, I think the pike is more prevalent throughout there, and it's, you know, it's attainable for all of them. And in Germany, it very much is. It's you know, it's their premier sport fish.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Like when you think of it, like compared to here, how it's perceived. You know, and now I think it's probably changing, but it's always going to be down the pecking order. It's always going to be down the hierarchy.
You know, I mean, well, I suppose salmon probably. I mean, and I say as a trout man, but and what do I say? I say to you, salmon, because salmon is recognized, looked upon here. It's the kingpin. It's the one up at the top. And like even in our in our own heritage, like the salmon of wisdom. Salmon means so much to us from when we're growing up. So I suppose, and it is looked upon as our premier sport fish here, I suppose. But you know, with the absence of that in other places, you can see why something like a fish the size of the pike could take over that mantle.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I think it is something that is growing in popularity. Maybe try it in the wintertime if you're interested. For those of you who do get out, love to hear any stories you have for it. But do also have a go later in the year, you know, maybe when it's less difficult, you know, and it's not as cold.
Be like the Michelin man.
Yeah, exactly. But look, I tell you what, let's hear from Botto and Marcus now. And I first asked Marcus about the rise in popularity of fly fishing for pike in Ireland.
Yeah, definitely here in Ireland, but also on the continent. And like yourselves, when you're avid salmonid angler, salmon trout, sea trout, the season finishes in, well, early October. So what to do then if you're kind of a fly addict? And pike is just an ideal target, ideal species. It extends the season back end, but also before the real trout fishing kicks in early in the year. So for me, it's a fantastic game fish, and it really extends your fly fishing year.
And what about you, Botto? How did you get into it? Like, because you're primarily, you're pike. That's it, isn't it? That's your bag, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm pike, full stop, in my personal fishing and also in my guiding. But more and more so, the pike fly fishing and pike fly fishing guiding has been on the scene over the last 10, 15 years. I'd probably started maybe close to 20 years ago, very basic, and then it took off from there. And the last, like I said, 10, 15 years, it would have increased the hell of a lot. And now it's a steady part of my guiding business, really, that I'm getting fly anglers from all over Europe or further away to come to Ireland for pike fishing and indeed pike fly fishing.
Bodo, just what you said there, you've seen an increase in the amount of lads coming pike, targeting the pike and the fly. What would you say the percentage is at the moment, and has that grown much?
In my personal experience, in my business, in my guiding business here, and then we have a full angling business, including B&B, etc. Probably, well, it's not 50% yet, but won't be a million miles away from it at this point. You know, I have regular guests that come, and some of them come twice a year, and they're fly only. And so, yeah, it's growing all the time, and I anticipate it to grow more.
And like from, let's say, when you started 15-odd years ago, what was the percentage then like?
A lot smaller.
Yeah.
You've got an occasional base fly fishing, maybe. Somebody looking for it, could have been local, even could have been an Irish client, or somebody who wants to just try it, maybe who's booked you for a week and who just wants to try it. And now we have dedicated guys coming, like they're either fly-only guys or they just want to do fly-only when they come here and want to catch big pike on the fly. That's the attraction, I guess.
Marcus, can I ask you, because obviously with your role with the RFI as well, is you, like, and recently, you know, you had a journalist come over, so, you know, you were kind of hosting or showing them around. I get the sense, and Bodo, you can come in maybe after Marcus on this, is Europeans seem to appreciate the pike fishing more over here than maybe Irish people, or correct me if I'm wrong, but is the kind of reputation of Ireland as a pike destination certainly one that's held in high esteem?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you imagine Ireland, got on the map originally on the continent, specifically in Germany, because of its pike fishing. This is what brought Ireland on the map in the first place. And there is still this fantastic reputation. And with regard to an increase in fly fishing for pike, we do see it here because we are dealing with international journalists. We are getting a lot of queries in and queries with regard to fly fishing for pike. They have substantially increased over the years. In the beginning, it was just niche, very niche. And there's two groups. There is the likes of us, I may say, who are fly anglers and have realized that there is also fly fishing for pike. But you also get the conventional fishermen, the lure anglers, who say, oh, hold on a minute, let's try out the fly rod. So there's these two groups we have identified, but definitely, like Bodo said, I'm not sure if it's 50%. Now, with Bodo, I guess, because he has really specialized a bit in fly fishing for pike, so the fly guys know him, so they book with him. If you're talking to other lodges or guides, it might be different, but it's definitely on the increase.
And Bodo, are you seeing it like definitely as a destination for Europeans? It's Ireland is like, and do you think it can be developed more as a pike destination?
It definitely is already a big destination among European anglers, and rightfully so. I mean, the product is still fantastic. And yes, of course, it can be developed more, and it doesn't have to be confined to Europe. I'm getting clients from further afield. I'm getting a few Americans from the East Coast, because they want to fly to Canada, it could be further away than Ireland for them. So that's what's happening there. But they're not necessarily fly clients. But who's to say that shouldn't happen? I mean, it can be promoted more, and arguably it should be promoted more, just as long as we look after our own, after the resource and after the fish and after the fishing and everything else. Why not? It's completely sustainable.
And is the attraction then, Bodo, for people that are visiting, is that is the size of fish, is it location, is it quality? Like compared to, for example, give us a comparison, is it like in Europe, where could you do pike fishing comparatively so?
Well, to be honest, in Europe you could go to quite a lot of places to pike fish, and a lot of people do, and there's some spectacular places all over Europe. But Ireland still holds its own, and we have a beautiful country here and wonderful scenery, wonderful people, friendly people. Still all the old attributes stand out, like, you know, people love coming to Ireland. It's not just the fishing, but it'll always be amongst the reasons. And so, like, it's the package. And if you ask people that come here, and my guys, and if I chat to them in the evenings, like, they always say it's everything around the fishing. It has to be the fishing on top of the list, but everything around it as well. Without that, they probably wouldn't come here. They might go somewhere else. So it's the whole package.
Bodo hit the nail on the head there, because this is also what we hear. You may have a great fly fishing for pike experience in Germany itself, the Baltic, like the Bodden waters, they are world-class fisheries, or Sweden. You know, you get fantastic pike fishing in Sweden. You get perfect accommodation there right at the water's edge. But what anglers tell us a lot, what attracts them to come to Ireland, is the package. It's basically the full experience. It's the hospitality, the crack. They are meeting people. They are part of the community. And it's not necessarily the size or the number of fish, but saying that, there's one thing that stands out. And a lot of people who have come here for the first time and hooked a pike, even on conventional tackle or fly, they are really, really amazed of, they say, oh my God, this must be a meter fish. And then when it's in the net and it measures 75 centimeters, and say, oh my God, that fish fought like mad. And it's this, I think, Irish pike, for whatever reason, they are airborne, they are really active, and they give you a big fight. Wouldn't you agree, Bodo?
Absolutely, yeah. And people confirm that all the time. Yeah, they're supposed to be amongst the best fighting pike in the world. And now, I haven't fished in a whole lot of country, but I've tried a few, and I could confirm the same. Absolutely.
Do we know why?
It's probably because our waters here, you know, they don't really cool down like in other parts of the world, you know. So pike are more active even during the colder times, and they feed more. So that could be, it's just metabolism maybe.
I'm fascinated, guys, just with, and Tom, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this as well, as the kind of the pike as the kind of lurking, evil, you know, that kind of, even the language associated with pike, you know, you think of salmon of knowledge, the leaping salmon, it's graceful, you know, you think of the trout in terms of, you know, they're, you know, rising for the hatches, all that, and then the pike is like the monster. And I think there's something about that that either appeals to anglers that they look, or I'll actually turn them off and go, do you know what? And traditionally, Tom, I'm interested in your, Irish anglers would traditionally have looked down their nose at pike. Is that true?
Yeah, well, you know, they would have, you know, let's say around here, like trout would be considered, you know, the fish, you know, and I suppose it depend on an area, whereas in, like, it was just like, whatever is the most endeared fish to them. And in Corrib, like here in Corrib, it would be the trout. You go back to the West Coast rivers, it's the salmon, you know, and that's to people, that's what the fish is, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, primarily in an area like this, it's, you know, people prefer the trout.
And Bodo, how are you finding it, like, in terms of where do you, you know, guide in terms of kind of, is it the kind of Roscommon area that's where pike are very strong up around the lakes around there, is it?
Yeah, I'm based in Boyle in the county of Roscommon, and my fishing would be in Roscommon, but also because we're in North Roscommon, close to County Sligo, close to County Leitrim, so it'll be in all of those three counties, and even sometimes further afield. If you go down the south of the county, you'll be crossing into Westmeath and Longford. Yeah, but like the Shannon system, which is big, obviously the biggest river in the country, and all its tributaries and lakes connected to it. And it has, thankfully, a large population of pike in it. And if we look after it, it should remain so. And that's the attraction here. So that's probably the number one fish.
How do the communities, Bodo, just in those areas, how do they regard the pike? Do they, you know, respect it, revere it? You know, like, are they glad that it's there from a fishing perspective?
Yeah, more so now, for sure. That has changed, I think, over the years, because pike now, also within Ireland and amongst Irish anglers, has gained its own status, and there is quite a large Irish pike angling fraternity. And so, yes, for sure. And within the communities, that's noticeable. There's fishing clubs, pike angling clubs, there's tournaments and competitions. And, you know, definitely the pike has grown a bigger reputation and a better one, arguably, over the years, for sure. Whereas one time maybe it had that, you know, that what you described early on, that sort of profile for people in the head. But that has improved for sure.
I like the whole idea of a fish being menacing. There's something that excites the imagination. Like,
really. Yeah, you made a good point there. So you don't know really what you want. You know, some people like to kind of fish for this, well, yeah, mysterious creature there, you know, that's supposed to feed on ducks and even small dachshunds. And you hear all these stories, you know. But I can definitely say I'm just coming back from this media visit in County Cavan, and pike over there. I mean, pike is the fish, you know, it's really highly regarded. You go to a pub and there's a big pike and an old pike in a case there, and it's all centered around pike fishing. So as Tom said, it's the area where you don't have that many pike, you know, the focus is on different fish. But talking a bit about my background, you see, like Bodo, I'm from Germany, and in Germany, pike is regarded as probably the number one sport fish. We don't, you see, it's just the kind of English terminology dividing between coarse fish and game fish, which doesn't do really justice to the pike, you know, being a coarse fish. So it depends, you know, your background. Like in Europe, Northern Italy, for example, I mean, the Italians, they are mad keen on pike, and they would give their right arm for catching a meter pike, you know. And they have the nicest salmonid rivers and marble trout waters, and yet they are so keen to come to Ireland to catch this pike on fly.
On most of the continent, would you find that actually, Marcus, on most of the continent, particularly not Northern Europe, but like mainland Europe as such, pike would be probably the biggest sport fish, wouldn't it?
I would agree so. Now, okay, we have sander, we have catfish, but I would say amongst all those predatory fish, pike is still the number one. That's from what we hear and when we're talking to visiting anglers, and definitely with regard to Germany, I would say.
Yeah, I'd agree with Marcus on that too. I think it's the predatorial nature of the pike, or the pike being the apex predator in many waters, in Ireland certainly, and then also in Europe, if you leave out catfish, that's what makes it so attractive. And the ferociousness, it's a toothy predator, so it has that, all those attributes, and also of course the size, that it can potentially grow very, very large, and that's what makes it so attractive. And going back to fly fishing, I suppose that's what makes that so attractive too, that you can, with fly tackle, obviously step it up a bit, but with fly tackle you can catch fish of considerable size, and that's one of the,
I think that's probably one of the biggest attributes to it in the fly fishing boat, definitely the fact that, you know, quite easily you can get a double figure fish on a fly rod.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing. You do well to get a double figure salmon on the fly.
Seriously, yeah.
I'm sure it's been done, but I mean, yeah.
You mentioned tackle. Let's get onto that, just for people who are interested and wanted to find out a little bit more. What's the kind of basic setup? Take us through it.
Okay, well, everybody has their own take on it, and it's interesting, and I see it in my guiding job all the time, and it's interesting to see people's different takes. And well, my personal opinion is as follows. I start with a 10 weight rod. I know you can catch pike with lighter, but I wouldn't. I just start with a 10 weight because I just don't see the point going smaller. Casting big flies, A. B, tackling big fish. There's no need to overplay them or play them longer than you need to. Doesn't do the fish any favor. So I would start with a 10 weight. And I wouldn't condemn anybody using bigger even. Not because you need to, but because you can. And so 10 weight rod, 9 foot long. Reel isn't important because you don't really need a serious drag. You can play them by hand depending on the state of your boat. or bank, wherever you're standing. Like, obviously, line management is an important issue. And then you're down to lines, and obviously that dictates where you're fishing and in what depths you're fishing, what depths you want to fish, where do you want to be in the water column, where do you want to present your fly, which obviously is an imitation of a fish in this case. And between the fly and the line, then you just have your leader, which we can define a bit more.
Going back to the line boat, I'll just ask you, what would be your go-to line? What's your is it a floater or an intermediate?
It's probably at this stage, my go-to line is, it's between an intermediate or a sink three. Either one of those I'd happily pick, and that in many times of the year and on many occasions I would, whatever is handy, I would fish either one of those all day long. If confidence would remain pretty high if I had one of those in my hand. That goes not for every day and not for all circumstances, but for a hell of a lot of them.
Right, and let's say on the either end of that spectrum, would you use a floater much?
I would use a floater, yes, occasionally in very shallow situations,
right.
Either shallow bays or shallow spots or shallow lakes in itself. If the water depth is such, or if there's heavy weed cover and you want to be above that, that's an exciting way to fish, and you definitely need a floater for that.
And then would you use a sink five or a DI seven?
I would do in at certain times. I would go down a bit deeper. And again, it's not always down to fishing extremely deep, but if you have large bulky flies or flies that are tied with buoyant materials such as bucktail or other synthetic fibers, just using a heavier line can just get those flies down one level down as well. And that's often the key. But I don't want to sound like you have to be way down. If I was to give somebody advice, one of the main pieces would be don't fish too deep, because it's much, much easier for a fish to see the fly above them than it is below them.
Right,
and that
fair
is
enough.
For all types of fishing.
Come here, Marcus, are you the same? Are you a 10-year-old?
I would be similar to Bodo. Now, also with regard to the rod, a 9 or a 10 weight, I wouldn't go anything less. Definitely, I agree there with Bodo. In terms of the lines, like Bodo, we have fished over the years. We've tried out many, many lines from different manufacturers. And if I would have to recommend an all-around line, if you would only have to pick one line, I would go for a fast intermediate. It would probably cover most scenarios. Saying that, if there is room, if I'm not flow tubing, I would actually bring 3 rods completely fitted with an intermediate, a sink 3, and a fast sinker. I very seldomly fish floaters, even when I'm fishing surface flies such as gurglers or poppers, because I find you can fish a gurgler or a popper even with sea bass fishing. I do it the same. I prefer the intermediate because it doesn't disturb the water that much. When you strip a floating line, there is a bit of friction on the water, on the surface. And it works perfectly. So I think the most important aspect of your tackle with regard to pike is actually the leader setup. Because a lot of people, you meet a lot of anglers, and some come here with titanium kind of traces or fluorocarbon or hard mono, and it's we have been probably like Bodo and all of us, we have been through various stages and experimented. And so at the moment, my leader would be probably I don't like the coated steel so much, because I think it kinks too easily. Saying that, sometimes the kink can be a bit of an attraction, but I find with the coated steel, you may have to change or you have to cut your and shorten your leader after every fish. So stainless steel, I prefer at the moment. There's a few brands out there, and the connection then between the steel and your leader, it's just a simple Albright or Yucatan knot. That's simple. Maybe, a foot of steel, and then maybe 1.25 meters, 1.50 meters of leader, and that's about it.
So just to go on that now, the top of your steel, let's say stainless steel or other coated trays, what is on that? Is it just a loop?
No, I've tied flies just with a loop, kind of a Rapala knot, something like this. But more recently, I'm using these spiral swivels, these fast touch ones, or the quick change swivel.
That's connected to the steel trace.
Yes, with a Rapala, with a loop, so to give it a bit of a, you know, flexibility. So basically three knots. You do a perfection loop at the end, which you attach to your loop on your fly line. And then from the leader material to your steel or wire, whatever you want to use, an Albright or a Yucatan knot. I find the Yucatan easier because it's just an easier knot. When you're in the water, in the flow tube, you don't want to, you know, you sometimes with your fingers are cold and so on. And then just attach this snap swivel or quick change swivel with another Rapala knot, and that's about it.
And the connection from the steel trace to the fly is
the steel trace. That's the quick
snap change.
Oh yeah, exactly, snap change.
Yeah. Yes. Bodo, is your setup similar?
Quite similar. Yeah, I would concur with Marcus there on most things. I wouldn't even get bogged down in those because there's a couple of them components are sort of down to preference, and I've seen a lot of different things work well, so I would opt for any of them. Main thing is whatever your hard mono or fluorocarbon. I use fluorocarbon as a leader, no less than 25 pound strength, preferably even maybe more, 30, 35, doesn't matter. And like Marcus said, 4 foot of that, meter 20 or maybe 5 foot at max, and then your steel leader onto that, either by direct knotting it, which can be done with knots as Marcus described, or uni knot or Albright knot, or you can have a little one of those. You can get these little rings; they're almost invisible and add very little weight to the setup. Or you can opt for a very little swivel, a small little one that doesn't add much weight. And then you have your steel leader. Again, I would go for wire. And then the business end of that, I would crimp on. I don't mind using crimps if it's done well. And I would also use the fast touch clips that you can just twist your fly into very quickly. And you can do it with cold hands. You can do it at any stage. And I've never lost a fish with them, whereas I've seen snaps of various brands and builds fail on many occasions. So I'm not condemning snaps, but there's good ones and bad ones. So the fast touch is a good way of attaching a fly for sure.
Two things on that, Bodo. Just what do you call the link to your fly? What are you calling it?
A fast touch clip. It's just a piece of wire that has an eye on one side that's solid and closed where the leader is attached to, where you crimp it or tie it on. And the other end is an open twist option where you can really just a half turn and have your fly snapped into position and pretty secure. You won't lose a fish with it.
You have no problems with using crimps on the traces?
I have no problems with using crimps. No, it depends on, if it's very fine stuff, then you need to be careful and it needs to be good quality and it needs to be done neat. You have the right crimping tool. There's a lot of crap out there that you could accidentally blunder into and that it wouldn't be a nice job. But if you take care making traces and if you use the right materials and tools, then it would be a good job.
Marcus, we might just talk about flies then. Are people a bit wary about being able to cast such big flies as well?
I was just going to ask you, how much time do we have left talking about flies? Well, where shall I start? I think what's important, particularly when you're a beginner, you don't want to fish a fly that gets too heavy. So you should avoid materials that actually don't shed very well, you know, with water. So I would always say for a beginner, avoid furs and stuff like this, you know, or kind of, I still have a few of these kind of sunker type, big sunker type flies with rabbit tails on it, but they can be very heavy or even very bulky flies. So artificial materials is the key, I think. You still want to get your fly to turn over very well. You want to get a bit of a distance. So yeah, I would say if you haven't done it, just practice it, because it's different when you have fished with tiny nymphs or dry flies all your life and 5 or 6 weights, and then you're handed a 10 weight with a 3-0 hook or whatever on it and a fly of 15 centimeters, it is different. You know, even your casting style has to be, I think, adapted, you know. So I would avoid overhead casting, like what you're probably taught when you're a beginner. So I would naturally cast always at an angle. But definitely get out there, test it, try it, wear glasses and a cap, because a 3-0 and debarbed hooks, that's what I could recommend. In terms of flies, patterns, my God, I mean, okay, if I would have to use 3 flies, I would definitely fish a fire tiger imitation. Okay, that would be one of my top 3 choices, all-round fly. Probably a fly, a completely white fly. White, I think white works very well for most predatory fish, also in the sea. If I would have only white material to tie, I would be very happy to go pike fishing or sea bass fishing. You know, that's no problem. And then probably some surface type fly. I do like the company Pike Trek used to bring these, what are they called again? Stealth flies on the market a few years ago. And they fish more, not vertically, they are horizontally tied. And they are exceptionally good when you're fishing in very shallow waters with a lot of weed. So these would be my 3 to-go patterns. Probably a darker fly, a black purple fly as well. Just go for contrasting colors. So white, fire tiger, and probably black purple.
And Bode, would you be similar?
In terms of flies, I'd be quite similar to Marcus. What he said, there would be a nice little box of flies. I'd be quite happy to bring that along with me as well, in terms of color choices and the name patterns that you described. The Pike Trek Stealth is a great fly, and we use them too quite a lot. And we've played around with all sorts of different flies over the last few years, and some are better than others. And color choice is quite similar to Marcus. You go a long way with that. I've played around with a few colors of late, and clients of mine have picked up on suggestions, and they have got their own tires onto different ideas that I had, and it's nice to see things work out well on those ideas. So that's something that's been happening over the last year or so. And like anybody who ties flies, I don't, by the way, too much. I tried a few and I caught fish on them, but I don't get bogged down in that. I don't have time for that. But other people do a far better job on that front than I do, so I let them do it.
Lead them do the tying. That's a good move, Bode.
I think so. Yeah. No, I've tried it. I got the satisfaction out of it. That's as much as I need to do.
That's it. The drug is the tug, isn't it? Or the tug is the drug. Just when you were saying it there, Marcus, the one thing that I noticed, and I think that's a really good tip. When I have tried it, is the first thing that got me when I was casting is that articulated movement. You know, as your line, anybody who's used to, let's say, just fishing 6 weights and whatnot, you just cast out and everything goes as normal. But with that heavier fly, there's that second movement, right? And that can really throw you. And I think that's a really good tip there about trying to stick with flies that are just synthetic materials, like Flashaboo or something like that, rather than, the furs and stuff and anything that soaks water. And that just doubles that articulated motion, which is quite unnerving, actually, when you're not used to it first. And really good on putting the rod to the side. Another thing is, or you could chuck and duck. just drop your head on the forward cast. Yeah. and then what I wanted to ask then on the flies. So we've gone through the colours. Here's the thing, size. And not just, first of all, hook size. What is the best? And then, because the dressings can be different, some of the dressings extend way beyond the actual hook.
Yeah.
So what's your preferred, like, do you think that the smaller hooks hook the fish better, first of all? What do you reckon, guys?
Not necessarily. I think one very important feature of a pike fly, for me, are the eyes on the fly. I've fished without eyes and eyes, and I've talked to other avid pike anglers, and they have all agreed that the eye, for whatever reason, is a big attraction. So I would, if there's one element to a fly when I'm tying, it's just a nice, decent eye. Okay. Two, of course, you know, on either side. In terms of size, again, I mean, it has to be manageable. I mean, there's this fantastic flies out there and they look super and they are big and bulky, but you do a couple of casts and you just don't enjoy it. And even if you're a good caster, you know, double hauling all the time. So it's tough. So difficult to say. It depends on your water. It depends on the bait fish in the water. It also depends on what fish are present there. I would say 10 to 15 centimeters as a rule, you know, but it's the silhouette. And this is, again, I come back to these pike track flies. Now, I do tie my own flies, but I also buy a few pike flies because I think material-wise, it's costly because a decent pike fly needs a lot of material. So it's the silhouette. I mean, if you're using synthetics, you can actually kind of create a fly that has a nice big silhouette, but that is still light, you know, because particularly when the pike attacks from below, you want a silhouette. You don't want something slim. You want something, hey, that looks chunky, you know, okay, I go up for this and I attack it. So I think it's silhouette over bulk.
Odo, what about tactics?
Get out there and fish. Do it as much as possible. Spend time on the water because that's
very good.
What it boils down to.
Secrets out.
Learn.
The secrets out.
Learn every day.
I don't need to buy any more books, though.
So. Yeah.
I wouldn't advise against it.
Sorry, go on. I'm interrupting.
Time on the water teaches you the most lessons and the best lessons, and that's what it really boils down to. And anybody wishing to play with this or anybody beginning in the beginning stages of it all, that's probably the best advice. And after that, then you get into the nitty gritty of, you know, tactics and specific tactics. But what Marcus said about silhouette of the fly, that is one of my key points as well. Big profile flies, they don't have to be huge, but they have to appear to be sizable from underwater, from below. And that's back to what we discussed earlier as well when I said about line densities and where you're fishing in the water column. Like I said, I'd sooner be a little bit higher than too far down. And that fishing a fly that's highly visible plays into that. And that's a good approach to many, many scenarios. And it'll get you fish for sure.
It's interesting. So the kind of traditional thinking is, oh, you know, we're in October, November, into the winter, let's turn to pike fishing. But the reality is probably a bit different. Maybe let's just start with winter. Is that a good time for pike fishing? What, you know, when is the best time?
Winter would be it'd be an excellent time for pike fishing, but it's not an easy time necessarily, especially not for lure or fly fishing, but it can be done, and it can be done rewardingly. And you're obviously fishing for potentially very large fish in the winter and very heavy fish more so. In the winter, you'd have to slow it down a bit. You'll have to maybe actually go a little bit lower in the water column than what I said originally. That's one of the times where it might be required to fish deep or to fish deeper than normal and slower. And adapt your retrieve to that. more pauses, a little bit longer pauses, and, you know, different stripping patterns, nothing too erratic at that particular point in time. But every day is different, and that still goes for an Irish winter because, as you know, our winters aren't set in stone in terms of weather. Like, it could be nearly as mild as in July, and it can be completely freezing like anywhere else in Europe. So we don't know. And so you have to adapt to that. But yeah, in the winter, a bit further down and see how it goes.
And Marcus, maybe you might just take us on to maybe the spring.
Again, I'd like to refer to my last week. I was out with this journalist, and it wasn't fly fishing. It was like any method, because water levels were beyond imagination. I mean, 2 meters above normal. And we sometimes realized we were fishing on a meadow in amongst barbed wire and not in the actual riverbed there. So, I fished with the fly. I just thought, look, I'll try the fly. And there was conventional tackle used, there was dead baits used and everything. And I was starting with a sink 3, and not a single touch, nothing. Not that the others got touches. It was difficult in general. But then I just changed them to a super fast sinking line and a very slow retrieve. And I picked up pike in 10 meters depth, 8 meters depth, 12 meters, you know, very slow, which showed me that the fly can work in winter. But I totally agree with Bodo for fly fishing in general, because you're usually fishing shallower water or during times where pike are more in the shallows than in the deep. The winter months can be tough. So from December, January, February, I would say with the fly, it's difficult unless you're fishing a water that isn't deep, where the pike can't really go into the deep. But it was an eye-opener to me. To cut a long story short, the fly produced more fish all week than any of the other methods. And that was a real eye-opener, I have to say. Okay, in springtime, yeah, you're fishing the shallows. I think it really depends on your water, on your home water. If you have a lake or a river, if it's a shallow water or not, you have to adapt. And I think I don't like too many artificial and technology when I'm fishing. I'm not against technology, but when you see these new sonars that are on the market and what can be done with them, it's not fishing. You see your pike, you see your lure, and I think, hey, why bother at all, you know? Now, saying that, I think a good old echo sounder, where you can see the bathymetry of a lake, where you can see the morphology, the depth, that would be one tool I would recommend for anyone who fishes for pike, because it's not to spot fish, but I think it's important to know, okay, where does it get deeper and stuff like this, because if you don't know your water, I think this is a great help.
And Bodo, what's your favorite time of fishing where you're guiding, what's the best time, maybe I should say?
Best time of the year? It's a tricky one, because they can all be really good. Like Marco said, even now it can be really good. And now you can face very large fish potentially. But yeah, I mean, the spring has a large attraction, and the post-spawn bite, let's say, as they call it, anything after spawning time, which usually happens around March and goes right into April potentially. Anything from mid-April onwards, May is great, because you have, you know, the weed starts to grow a bit quicker and higher, and you have weed beds and places like that when you don't need to fish horribly deep. Fish are sitting reasonably easily accessible. Yeah, that's a good time. May, June, April, May, June, second half of April, May, June, that's a key time. But I don't want to really take away from any of the other times, because they're equally important to me, and they can be equally good as well. I mean, we're just coming out of the autumn time now, and it's been good, and it has been extremely good on certain days. So it's just different fishing, really.
Aren't we spoiled for choice, aren't we? Like, you know, because you're mentioning, you know, the months of April, May, and of course, you know, trade anglers are thinking mayfly season, you know, the different hatch of salmon anglers are thinking of grills, and then you throw pike into the mix as well. And it's like, and I think that's probably why so many fly anglers maybe just automatically in the wintertime turn to it, isn't it? Like,
that's probably it for the traditional trout and salmon angler. If you want to extend the season, then absolutely yes, perfectly. So, I mean, seamless almost when the season closes for salmonoid species in the end of September or mid-October, you can switch straight away onto pike and you're right there in the middle of it. And then as we go to the late autumn and winter now, like Mark said, you just go down a bit lower and you fish a bit slower, but you have there's still fantastic fishing to be had. And then you can continue to do so till they start spawning again and then maybe give them a break, you know, and then after that, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, and don't forget, now this is domestic market, but when you think about the overseas market or the continental anglers, there is closed seasons for pike, and we don't have a closed season. So that's a big attraction as well for visiting anglers. You know, in Germany, correct me if I'm wrong, Bodo, but I think it's the 1st of May. Before the 1st of May, you're not allowed to target pike. And look, April, we know April can be over here fantastic, probably one of the best times to fly fish or fish for pike in general. So that's something to consider as well.
Absolutely. And that plays into our hand as a destination for sure.
Guys, question I wanted to ask you, and do you have to go from a boat, or are there plenty of opportunities for guys? Let's say somebody's listening there and they go, you know, I'm going to have a stab at this, and they have the gear or they're going to get the gear. Is it quite feasible, like, or do you really have to have a boat?
Of course. I mean, you don't really have to have a boat, full stop. Now, saying that, fishing in general for pike from a boat, it opens up so many more options. Now, you do limit yourself, definitely, when you're just trying to fish from the bank or wading in. Not so much that you wouldn't reach the fish casting, you need to be out in the middle. It's excess. Most lakes are fringed by reeds, all swampy ground. And I think it's excess more than not being able to reach fish with the fly rod if you're bank fishing. Now, a nice compromise, I'm met keen on flow tubing. So you get these devices now relatively cheap, and they are reliable. And it needs a bit of training to get the flippers on and know how this thing is moving. But it's not rocket science. And with the flow tube, I think a myriad of probably untouched waters becomes accessible. And I think it's a nice compromise. There's can fish of kayaks, but I think flow tube, even if you have to walk a bit, they pick up in a backpack, you bring a little pump and you pump it up and then off you go.
I think that's a whole episode in itself. We should definitely do it a future time. Yeah, I think it's a fascinating, like, same with kayaking as well.
Yeah.
Bodo and Marcus, I'll start with you, Bodo. I think it's fascinating that we've two Germans here telling us about pike fishing in Ireland. I think it correlates with, and that's why I'm fascinated, Bodo, maybe you might just tell us your own background in Germany, and was it because of the pike fishing in Ireland that led you over here, essentially?
Yeah, it's a bit strange, all right, two Germans talking about it, but fascinating is the word that you used there, and that's probably the reason. Like, we probably both got fascinated by the country itself and fishing on offer, amongst many other things that drew us here. In my case, certainly so. Like, I'm from Berlin originally, and I would have set foot on this island when I was 11 first time and kept coming back for more after that with my father at the time and later with friends, and just enjoyed it too much to not keep doing it. And eventually I had to just move here, which I did, thankfully, so 23 years ago.
And was it primarily for the pike fishing, Bodo?
It was always part of it, but it wasn't. It was more a bigger choice. It was a lifestyle choice too. It was I just preferred life here potentially to city life in Berlin. So that's in my case, that's what drew it. But like, if there was no fishing available here, it wouldn't have happened either. So yeah, it was always part of it too, you know.
From Berlin to Boyle.
Berlin to Boyle. It's been said many times, but I like it.
and Marcus, yourself?
Yeah, well, also quite similar to Bodo. I think the two of us are best examples what, you know, what Ireland can offer. And it was the fishing in the first place. I mean, if I have to go back a bit in time, I actually spent a family holiday here in Ireland in 1980. And I hadn't a clue about fishing. I didn't know what a fishing rod looked like. And we happened to be with another family there. And one of these guys was an angler. And he says, if we go to Ireland, we need to bring the fishing rods. And cut long story short, we had a self-catering place in Ireland. And out we went with the boat at the time, wooden lake boat at the time. And yeah, I was handed the tiniest rod, the tiniest little kind of copper spoon, and I was the smallest on the boat. And again, cut a long story short, I ended up with the first fish, the most, and the biggest. And now guess what? They were pike, and that hooked me for life. So that was in 1980, and after the holiday, came back to Germany, said, "Oh, this is great. I want to become an angler." Suddenly realized, sugar, I need to do an exam to fish. So, which I did. And from there, it all developed. And then just fishing holidays, not specifically for pike, studying over here, and then, you know, just being at the right place at the right time. And now I'm actually in the very lucky situation that I can actually help to promote Ireland as one of the best angling, sustainable angling destinations in the world. You know, for me, a dream has come true, and my heart is with it. And like Bodo, I couldn't see myself going back to Germany, definitely not in the near future. No, I'm not from a city background. I'm from a rural background, so I fit very well into the boglands of Northwest Mayo. But no, hey, love at first sight, I would say.
Just before we go to the final question, sir, I just want to just rewind there a little bit, because people mightn't be aware of this. When you said you had to do an exam to be able to fish, just tell people about that.
Yeah, I think Germany and probably Switzerland are the only two countries I know of in the world where you actually have to do a course, and you have to demonstrate that you have... knowledge, skills. So it's a kind of theory. It's kind of like a driving test. You have so many questions. You get a book, and it's multiple choice then, and it's over a few weekends. So you have this theory part. You have to pass this one. And it would cover any aspects from gear, species, biology, legislation, name it. And then you also have to do a practical test. Now, it varies from county to county a little, but the practical test would include casting. You have to demonstrate that you're accurate and so on. And in some counties, I think we even have to demonstrate that you know something about fish biology. So quite comprehensive. And that's, again, one of the questions that we are getting asked when we are dealing with visiting anglers at expositions or over the phone and so on. They say, "Oh, do I need to bring my German angling certificate?" And I says, no, it's all free here. You just, pike fishing is generally free in most waters. So you just come and you don't need your German certificate. So it's something that probably we here in Ireland or Irish anglers don't realize that everyone can go and fish here, you know.
I have a funny feeling that the exam would not take off in Ireland, Tom, with Irish anglers.
Yeah, it might be a slight reluctance.
It would make the rod wars look tame by comparison, I'd say.
I wouldn't mind for sure. Everybody get an A+ anyway.
Definitely.
Oh, it'll be 100% all around. I tell you what, sometimes here in May time, when I see some of the boats been driven, I yearn for an exam.
Yeah. Right? Well, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I think there is nothing wrong with demonstrating that you have the skills, you know, I mean, and it helps. I mean, you really get into it. If you're not really genuine about it, you won't go through, I don't know how many questions. At my time, which goes back, oh, many years, it was 500-600 questions, you know, so it's and you learn quite a bit as well.
I think you're aware, we ask everybody that comes on the show what their most memorable fish on the fly was. So Bodo, go to start with you, your most memorable fish on the fly.
Well, there's so many, it's difficult to pick really, but one of the most memorable fish must be the first meter pike on the fly, which I can't recall exactly which year, but I know where it was and how it happened. And it was quite enjoyable, to be honest. I was over the moon with it. And it wasn't that long after starting fly fishing for pike to get one. But it just, you know, it fascinated me more.
That's kind of like the, what should I say? It's like in America, the 2020 or whatever. But it's the meter long pike, isn't it? And to get one on the fly, yeah.
A meter long pike is the goal for many continental anglers, I guess. Over here, it's more weight driven, but yeah, a meter fish is a decent fish in terms of weight. That's at least a mid double at the very least, usually, you know, apart from any extremes. And it could be even a 20 pounder at that stage, you know, depending on how well the fish is fed.
What do you reckon he would have been?
High double, yeah. 18, 19 pound or something at the time. It was a nice fish, really nice fish, meter three or something like that. I think I measured him. And it was highly enjoyable. I was able to share with a friend the experience, and it was fantastic. Yep.
Did you know it when you hit him that he was a good one?
I did. Yeah. Because it exploded pretty much after I hit it. So yeah, it showed itself quite early on. So it was exciting to say the least.
And over to you, Marcus.
Yeah, if you would have asked the most memorable fish, it would definitely be that first pike, the first fish in my life 42 years ago in Ireland. But on the fly, it's difficult. I mean, there's loads of memories. It could be a small gudgeon that picks up your nymph when you're trying to fish for grayling or something like this. Or an exotic species, the tiger fish on the Zambezi. But I think it's my, and I have to say this is a pike thing here, but it's probably my first ever salmon caught on the Ownmore River in Bangor Areas in County Mayo. You know, in a fly angler's life, this is a milestone when you catch your first salmon, and your first salmon is on the fly. It's like, and after having lost your potentially first fish on your birthday, and then a couple of days later, no rain, low water, almost no chances. And the last day of your trip, you end up hooking this fish, and it was a tiny little grills, but look, I didn't care. That's probably my most memorable one.
Excellent. Well, we actually have, there have been a couple of exceptions here of guys having their memorable fish has not been caught on the fly, and can understand you there with your first ever fish.
Yeah.
How that would stick in your mind. But you know, something special about the first salmon on a fly too. So
yeah.
Yeah. So that actually all three are great, lads.
Yeah. Well done. Well, Marcus and Bodo, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you. I loved getting the insights in terms of kind of, you know, the tactics, the setup, the technical side of it for pike fishing. I think what getting out of this is really is, you know, the kind of growing side of that as a sport. And maybe in Ireland, why we, you know, hopefully start to appreciate it a bit more, I think, within the fly angling community. And as they say, a dog is not just for Christmas. Pike fishing is not just for Christmas either. You know, you try and get out during the year. Bodo, before we let you go, just for people that they are interested in fly fishing for pike, where you guide, what's the website? How can they find out more, Bodo?
I'd be happy to contact me. They can look up my website, anglingservicesireland.com, or to find me on social media, Bodo Funke or Angling Services Ireland again. I'd be delighted to give somebody advice or to bring somebody out, even better still.
Bodo, Marcus, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Our thanks to Marcus Muller and Bodo Funke for joining us on the show. And don't forget to rate, review, and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com as well as on Instagram, and myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mann.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.